If you take the words eitz and ilan, okay, sometimes trees are referred to as eitzim, and by Tu B'Shvat specifically it's Rosh Hashanah le'ilanos. Chazal pretty much are the ones that designate trees as ilan. Something very interesting about the words, and it can reveal a lot about philosophy of the world from these two words. Eitz, the letters, first of all, look like a tree. The ayin and the tzaddik, if you look at them, the way they're written in the Torah, right, they look like things with a root going down, a trunk going down, and branches coming out, and even little leaves coming out of the branches as the tagim, the crowns on the letters. But the letters themselves, if you read them as words, say ayin tzaddik. Look, and you'll see a tzaddik. Look at the tree. Even though the letter is not tzaddik, it's tzaddi, but the Gemara in Shabbos says that the tzaddi represents a tzaddik. So if you look at the tree, ayin tzaddik. Look and you'll see a tzaddik. Just look at the tree, the configuration of a tree, and you'll see what a tzaddik is. How does that work? So the Maharal Miprag comments on the fact that Chazal make a, in Sanhedrin, what's it called, tzaddik test, I think, but I'm not sure. The Gemara over there speaks about a person being compared to a tree. Right? Ha'odam eitz hasadeh, which in itself is a difficult analogy because the simple meaning of the pasuk is just the opposite. Right? If you look at the context of the sentence, right, the Torah says when you make a siege on a city, don't cut down the trees, because are the trees then people that they're coming to fight against you? Which would seem to imply that the trees are not people. So there is no connection between trees and people. But Chazal read the sentence as if it would be, B'nichusa ki ha'adam eitz hasada. Man is like the tree of the field. If we have time, maybe we'll understand how that works also. But in any case, there's a connection, though, that Chazal make in the Gemara in Tainis. The Gemara says that Talmud Chacham is like a tree, and if he bears fruit, then fine. If he doesn't bear fruit, then doesn't teach people or whatever, is not good. In any case, the Gemara uses this analogy between people and trees. Says the Maharal, what's the analogy? He says the analogy is the following. If you look at a person, okay, and you would want them to appear like a tree, okay, just the configuration of a tree. Okay, I was once in a play in school. I was a tree. So I had to stand with my arms up, right? And I was a tree. But the truth is, I would have been a better tree if I was standing on my head. Because then your root, hair, roots, are down. You have the trunk. And you have coming out of the trunk, the limbs. So a person would look more like a tree if he was standing on his head. So why are we upside down trees? That's what we can learn from a tree. That's the connection. We have our root, we have our trunk, we have our limbs. The main part of the tree is the root. Because if you cut the root, then the tree is gone. If you cut away the limbs and the root is still there, the tree can still grow. Trees are firmly planted in this physical world. So their root is planted in Gashmias, and their limbs extend upward. We human beings are not planted in the physical world. We are planted in the spiritual world. So our root faces where we're planted, in the heavens. We happen to be growing in this world upside down. We grow from up down. So if you look at a tree and you see its configuration, you see where the roots are and where the limbs are, and then you look at a human being, you understand that the root of a human being is his head, and really it's not planted in the ground, it's planted in the heavens. That's, the Maharal says, is what you can learn from a tree about a human being. What's the ikker? What's the tofel? By the human being, his head is the ikker, and it's the only thing is we're upside down in this world. It comes out that if we would taka be in a spiritual world, then we would really should be like a tree. Their head down and the limbs up. Okay? And I found quite a few sources that say that in the spiritual world, people walk on their heads. Don't get scared if you can't do that, because in the spiritual world, there's no up, down, right? It's just figuratively speaking. But the whatever that means, in the spiritual world, your head is the root. And that's down, and the rest emanates up. Okay, Alpi Kabbalah, in fact, there are Hasidim who they used to make somersaults or stand on their head to have this idea of regula mala, where the head is down and the regal is up, and that's what's it called. That is the concept of spirituality. Okay, I found a few sources to that. One, I found one commentary. I don't remember who it was, and the truth is, I don't remember where I saw it, but I know I saw it. That the Gemara says that one of the Amoraim basically fainted or died clinically, and he saw the other world, spiritual world. And they asked him, "What did you see?" Who was it? Oh, he said, "Olam hafuch reisi, elyonim lamata v'tachtonim lamala." So there's many different pshatim what that means. But one pshat that I saw means this, that in the spiritual world, the top is on the bottom and the bottom is on the top. That people walk on their heads. I found a medrash that says it openly. The medrash is in Paneach Raza in Parshas Chayisara. The medrash says that when Rivka saw Yitzchak Avinu the first time, she was sitting on a camel and she fell off the camel because she was astounded by what she saw. So the Medrash says, what astounded her so much? It says that Yitzchak, by the Akedah, his neshama mamish fled from him out of fright, right before the knife was going to hit his throat. And he died. And the Rabbanu Shalom resurrected him. And that's when the Malachim said, Baruch Atah Hashem, Mechaya Mesim. So he needed to be recuperated. So he went to Gan Eden for 2 years to be. That's why he didn't return from the Akedah. It just says Vayoshev Avraham El Na'arav. Doesn't mention Yitzchak. Where was Yitzchak? It says Yitzchak went into Gan Eden for 2 years to recuperate. The moment that Rivka saw him was the moment that Yitzchak was emanating from Gan Eden. He was coming back into this world. And the Medrash says, and it is well known Yadua that in the Olam Ha'Elyon people walk on their heads. And therefore, at that moment, Yitzchak Avinu was emanating from Gan Eden, walking on his head, and when Rivka saw him, right, she fell off the camel. Maybe she was trying to get on her head too, right, to be like her chosim. Right, she fell off head first. So you see from here that there is such an idea, that in a spiritual world, people, what's it called, are on their head. To which Rabbi Carman once commented, that maybe that's the why most people are born head first. Because you're coming from a more spiritual world, you're coming into this world, you're coming into a world head first. That does, if you were born breached, don't worry about it. It's right? But the vice, it has an idea of that too. That's why people come into this world, back head first. As you come into the world, then the more spiritual posture. Okay, you remember saying that? Okay. What? Okay. Okay. Another thing that you can understand from this is that when we want to maintain a spiritual posture in this world, so the way of doing that is uncovering your feet and covering your head. Right, taking off your shoes and covering your head. Yom Kippur, take off our shoes, cover our heads. An Ovel takes off his shoes, covers his head. By Yibum, we take the person's shoe off. Right, Moshe Rabbeinu, Shal Na Lecha Me'al Raglecha, in the Beis HaMikdash, took off their shoes. Right, what's the idea? The idea is the following. Really, if we would be in a spiritual world, our heads would be down, be clear, that's the root, and the limbs would be up. But since we're in a physical world, we stand on our limbs, because we're standing on the physical world. And in fact, there's a pasuk that says, "Hayikum asher baragleihem, zem mamono shel adam shemaimid oso al raglov." According to this, it can be taken literally. Since we're in a physical world where there's money, physicality, that puts us on our feet. Because if we wouldn't be in a physical world, we'd be on our heads, not on our feet. It's mamono shel adam shemaimido shel haraglav. So that's what puts us on our feet. So, but if you want to show a spiritual look, and it should be clear that this is your root, and the feet are your, not your root, but your limb, even though it's inverted. So in a tree, the root is covered, and the limbs are exposed. So you take off your shoes, and expose the limbs, cover your head, and then it's clear this is the, even though this is the one that's exposed, and seemingly you're standing on your feet, it's only because we're in a physical world. But our root is in the spiritual, and our limbs are on the ground. But when we uncover the limbs and we cover our head, we show that we're really a spiritual being. So more, when you get to a spiritual posture, you uncover your feet and you cover your head.
Oh, what's that?
Yeah. I don't know. When we get there, I'll find out. It's a good question. But the truth is that each part of the body in a spiritual world doesn't do the same physical function it has here, but has similar kinds of functions. It'll give us mobility, but not necessarily in having to walk on the ground. Okay, but a different kind of mobility. Whatever. Maybe like a propeller. Another thing they can understand with this is a Gemara in Chagiga. The Gemara says, "Mayofu po'amayich bana'olim bas nadiv." It's a pasuk in Shir Hashirim. How beautiful are your footsteps in your shoes, bas nadiv, the daughter of the nadiv, the daughter of the munificent one, Avram Avinu, who was the first ger, first convert. So the Gemara explains this pasuk, "Mayofu pa'amayich bana'olim bas nadiv." How beautiful are your footsteps in your shoes when you come aliyah l'regel, when you come shalosh regalim to the Beis Hamikdash, bas nadiv, the daughter of Avram Avinu, who was the first ger, he volunteered to become Jewish. It's a connection. He's thinking normally, shoes represent gashmius. When you're in your shoes, you're in a gashmius mode. Okay. There's one time a year, or three times a year, that a person can be beautiful even in his shoes. That's Aliyah L'Regel. Aliyah L'Regel is where you take all the physical things, eating, drinking, whatever, and you make them into spiritual things. And that's exactly what the words Aliyah L'Regel means. You take your foot and you elevate it. The foot represents the gashmiyath part of the person, the limb. Aliyah L'Regel means you raise your feet. You elevate your feet. The feet become, in the shoes, become already ruchnius, because you change the gashmius into ruchnius. The things that are normally material become spiritual. You take the eating, drink, they become mitzvahs. Where do we get that power to change the physical into the spiritual? Avraham Avinu gave us that power, because he took the body of a goy and changed it into a Jew. That's the greatest transformation from gashmi to ruchni. And if he could do that, then we, his descendants, have the power of taking physical things and transforming them into spiritual things. So that is eight. Again, if you look at the configuration of a tree, then you'll be able to see what a tzaddik is. Just the pasuk, the Maaseh, seems to say that people and trees are not the same. Adam eats hasada, right? Does Adam have a connection to a tree? But it could be that Mitzlach, in his Hakadama to his Sefer Tzion L'Nefesh Chaya, he says the following. He says, Rabbi Cheskel Landau is the Note of Yehuda. He wrote a Sefer called Tzion L'Nefesh Chaya, and there in his preface, he makes the following comment. He says that man is called Adam for two reasons. One is he comes from the Adama, comes from the earth. And he's also Adam Elokel. He can emulate God. That, I think, explains, he doesn't say this, but that explains why Jews are called Adam, whereas Goyim are called Ha-Adam. When it says Ha-Adam, it applies to Goyim too. When it says Adam, plain, it applies only to Jews. Now, at first glance, it should be just the opposite. Ha-Adam with the Hey Hayadia, that's Jews. Adam Stam, okay, that's a Goyim also. Why is Adam Stam only Jews, and Ha-Adam also Goyim? So I was thinking, based on this, since there are two meanings to Adam, so if you're called Adam Stam, that means you have both meanings. That's only Jews. Jews have the meaning they came from the Adama, and also Adame Lokeo, the more esoteric meaning. Goyim have only the major meaning of Adam, that they come from the Adama, Ha-Adam. They have the meaning of Adam, Ha-Adam, but not both meanings, Stam. So Stam Adam has both meanings, that's Jews. And Ha-Adam is, what's it called, also Goyim. The name of the Pasuk says, what's it called, the Chi, Ha-Adam Eitz HaSadeh, right? If you're looking at Ha-Adam, just the fact that man comes from the ground, then he has no connection to a tree at all, because he's upside down. Trees are planted, the roots down and the limbs up, and human beings have their limbs down and their root up. And if you're in Ha-Adam, that the main thing is you're planted in this Gashmiistic world, then you should be upside down. You're not. But if you're in Adam, and the main idea is that you can emulate God, and therefore you're planted not in the physical world, you're planted in the spiritual world, then you're like a tree. Your root is planted in your medium, in the heavens, and your limbs extend downward. Except since the heavens are up and this earth is down, so you're growing down from your medium. So then you're mamish like a tree. But if your medium is the earth, you came from the earth, that's your medium, then you're not like a tree at all. Because then your root should be down, your head should be planted in the earth. And it's not. You're a mamish standing on your limbs and your root is up in the air. You're not like a tree at all. So it says, Ha-Adam eitz HaSadeh. Is Ha-Adam like a tree? No. But Adam is. That could be the idea. Okay, in any case, that's eight. Not now. I really don't have time. And in some other shir we'll talk about it. Now let's get to the Ilan. Something interesting about Ilan, and that is if you take the Aleph and put it on the side, the last three letters of Ilan are Yud, Lamed, Nun. Yud, Lamed, Nun, if you add them together, is 90. Okay? Yud, Lamed, 10, 30, and 50 is 90. 90 is Tzadik. That's the letter of 90. Now, take the Yud, Lamed, Nun, you put them together, you have a Tzadik. Put the Aleph back, what do you have? Eight. Aleph, Tzadik. So an Elon is an eight with an Aleph. What? What? Right. It's eight with an Aleph. Right? It's eight with an Aleph. And this is eights with an ayin. So if you have an eights with an aleph, just like we said, ayin tzaddik means something. Look and you'll see a tzaddik. Here you have an eights with an aleph. Aleph tzaddik means learn about the tree and you'll see a tzaddik. Right? Don't look at it. If you look at it, an elon is usually a fruit-bearing tree. Right? Eights can be fruit-bearing, not fruit-bearing, but eights also can be the wood of a tree is called eitzim. Right? A dead tree is called an eitz. But an ilan is more the fruit-bearing tree. Now, even though they're ilan esrak, which means, what's it called, trees that don't bear fruit, the Chazal say that every tree eventually will bear fruit. Good, good. Okay, but it's even more than that, because Gemara says that not everything is an Ilan Srak, because all Ilan Esrak will bear fruit in the future. They're potentially fruit-bearing trees. There are trees that are not even Ilan Esrak. They're Bechlal, what's it called, never bear fruit. But all Ilan Esrak, you're right. The fact that it has to say Srak means that normally Ilanim, but even those will one day bear fruit. So the Ilan is more or less the fruit aspect, whereas the Eitz is the more the configuration of the tree, the wood of the tree, the form of the tree. So we're going to explain how you look at the form of the tree and you'll see a tzaddik. Now if you learn about the fruit bearing qualities of the tree, you'll know what a tzaddik is. So learning about an ilan, eight, aleph tzaddik, you'll learn, aleph means to learn, aleph tzaddik, learn about the tree, you'll know what a tzaddik is. If you learn about the concept of fruit. So we've explained in the past that that what's it called? fruit is a symbol of a type of philosophy. It says Avraham Avinu, when he was traveling around the world, was in Aram Naharaim, and he saw the Goyim eating and drinking and partying, and he said, God, please don't give this land to me. Right? This is not a place I want to bring up my children, my half-children in the future. And he came to Eretz Yisrael, and he saw a bunch of Ovdei Avodah Zorah planting, plowing, harvesting. He said, this is the place I think is good for my children. Now, the surface doesn't make too much sense. What's the mile of a bunch of Ovdei Avodah Zorah planting, plowing, and harvesting over a bunch of Ovdei Avodah Zorah partying? Right? They're still Ovdei Avodah Zorah. But the idea is that there's two kinds of philosophies in this world of life. One is eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. This world is a place to have pleasure, or as I saw once in a t-shirt they were selling in New York, the one who has the most toys when he wins, when he dies, wins. Right? That's what this world is all about. Amass as much toys as you can, and if you have the most toys on your block when you die, you win the game. So, fine, if that's life, life is immediate gratification. In fact, that was the, or there's another philosophy, this world is a world of a means to reach an end. It's not the end in itself. It's a place to create the world to come. You plant the seeds here, and you reap the profits in the future. Yaakov and Esav represented these two philosophies. Esav was a hunter, whereas Yaakov, according to the Rashbam, the simple meaning of the pasuk, Yoshev Ohalim, Ish Tam, Yoshev Ohalim, was a shepherd. What's the significant difference between a shepherd and a, what's it called, and a hunter? A hunter doesn't want to know from the animal until he can go into the forest, shoot it, and eat it, right? Or capture it and use it, whatever. He wants immediate results, immediate gratification, not to put any work in for the future, go in, get it now. The shepherd raises the animal when it can't do anything for him, and he raises it for a future goal of meat, milk, whatever it may be that he wants from the animal, work. In fact, the names, Esav is Osli, finished. Media gratification. Yaakov is Ekev, what's going to be in the end, what's going to be in the future. So, Chutz La'aretz, Avraham Avinu saw that Chutz La'aretz is conducive for a philosophy of immediate gratification, right? This world for the sake of this world. You can fight against that, and you can live a beautiful Torah life in Chutz La'aretz, but you have to fight against the environmental what's in the essence of the air, right? That's what Chutz La'aretz is all about. Eat, drink, and be merry. Party. Okay. On the other hand, Eretz Yisrael, Avira de Eretz Yisrael Machkim, the environment here is an environment that induces a person to the other philosophy, to put in work now for the future. So by Ovdei Avodah Zorah, it was planting, plowing for the future, for nearby future, for the fruit. Right? Even here, the non-frum, or maybe even anti-frum, what's it called, chalutzim, that came here, right, weren't looking for immediate gratification. Right? They suffered in draining the swamps or whatever, but they were building for a future purpose. So you can live here in Eretz Israel and go against that, and live a very fine, secular life of eat, drink, and be merry. But you have to fight against the environment. You have to fight against the environmental influence. In Chutz La'aretz, you can fight against it and live a very nice frum life, but you have to fight against the environmental influence. So, and just to give you an example of the difference, I remember one year I left Eretz Yisrael for a trip to Chutz La'aretz the night that they had the Shvuah HaSefer, right, book week. So I remember taking my family, and we were walking around tables looking at Sfarim or whatever, and a lot of other people were out. Okay, true, and common Israelis also come look at books. Okay, some of the books maybe should be burnt, but Lamaisa, they're books. It's interesting, you know, people come out and they spend an evening with their children walking around tables looking at books. I landed in New York, and the person who met me at the airport said, you have a rare opportunity. Tonight in Javits Convention Center, they're having the Kosher Food Fair. What's that? Where all the producers of kosher food bring out their latest products, put them on long tables, and everybody walks around looking at the food, tasting it or whatever, so they get an idea what the new kosher food is. And it just hit me. I didn't go. But it just hit me, like, it's big. I left Eretz Yisrael where everybody's walking around tables looking at books, and here they're coming looking at food. It's like, right, there's got to be some message over here that there's a little bit of difference between the environment. Not to have anything against food, believe me, nothing. But when that becomes like the focal point of Yiddishkeit, right, I noticed in the paper then, in Chutz La'aretz, that they had a 24-hour kashrus hotline that you could call to find out if something was kosher. If 4 o'clock in the morning, right, you woke up and you just had this tremendous desire to eat something and you weren't sure if it had a good hechsher or not, you could call this number. I understand a hotline for other halachas maybe. But if you wake up 4 o'clock in the morning, why can't you wait like till 9 o'clock and call your Rav? Right? Why do you have to have a 4 o'clock in the morning kashrus hotline to know if you have to eat that thing? It's like pikuach nefesh. If it's pikuach nefesh, you don't need to know if it's a kosher. And if it's not pikuach nefesh, why can't you wait till 9 o'clock in the morning? So, fine. There's nothing wrong with eating kosher food. But when that becomes like the focus of life, it tells you something about the brand of Yiddishkeit. Okay, in any case. So therefore, if you learn about the concept of fruit, you'll see what a tzaddik is. The concept of fruit is, don't look at the world as something for immediate gratification. Look at it as putting in effort now for future fruit. And the Miri says, Olam Haba is the fruit of Olam Hazeh. It's not a separate world. You plant the seeds here, you reap the fruit there. Now, one more. What? Shalom ochel peiroseim. That's the peiros of mitzvos. That's not olam haba. Olam haba is the pre of olam hazeh. There's mitzvahs that have keren and peiros. Okay. One more interesting thing. I see we're not going to get past this. So, in order to understand this concept of fruit, okay, that the concept we're saying of fruit is that how to look at this world. This world is not the one who has the most toys wins. It's not eat, drink, and be merry. It's put in effort now, the fruit you'll reap later. So the Torah gave us mitzvahs in Eretz Yisrael, where that concept of fruit is strongest. The Torah gave us mitzvahs to do with fruit. And in that way, it drives home the concept of the fruit, right, in a much more intensive way. What are those mitzvahs? Those are mitzvahs atluyos ba'aretz, which basically are four kinds of mitzvahs, okay? Truma, Maaser Rishon, Maaser Sheni, and Maaser Ani, okay? Okay, yeah, those are, what's it called, but the ones that you have to do with the fruit itself, not the isurin that come, kilayim, oral, or whatever, but the major, they fall into four categories. There's what's called the reishis. That includes not only Maaser Rishon, not only does it include Truma, which is a reishis, Chala, it includes Chala, Bikurim, all those are taking the first and dedicating them to the Rabbanu Shalom. So you have the first of the dough, and the first of what's it called, Truma, and the first fruits, and the first of the Dagon, reishis de Goncha, that's Truma. So that's one type of mitzvah with fruit. Take the first and dedicate them to Hashem. Then there's Maaser Rishon. Take the tenth and dedicate it to Hashem. Let's analyze that first. The first sets the foundation and the root for everything that comes after. So if when you're dealing with fruit, you understand that the concept of the fruit is holy. Fruit is to be kodesh. So you're not looking at the fruit as something that's short-term benefit, long-term, olam haba benefit. So understand that by making the first of the fruit holy, give it to the Kohen or whatever, so you understand, you set the pattern, you set the foundation and the root, that the fruit gives you this concept of holiness. So be makdish the reishis, truma. And then the goal of the fruit is holiness. The goal is represented by the tenth. Once you start with one, that represents the Rabbanu Shalom, unity. Achdus, Hashem, is one. After you have two, three, four, you get away from unity. When do you return to that unity? At 10. At 10, you take all the things that were separate and you unite them into one unit of 10s. That's why 10 is a number of holiness. It's also a number that takes many things and makes them into one. A minyan is one unit, a community. That's community, right? Is what's it called? Is what's it called? Is 10. So 10 is the unity of many things. So you start with one, that's the foundation of holiness, and you end, the goal is to take all the many things and unite them again under Hashem, and that's the goal of holiness. So you take the beginning of the fruit, and you understand that that's holy, that sets the pattern of what the fruit's supposed to teach you about Olam Haba, and you take the tenth of the fruit, which is the goal of everything, is to reach that holiness again. You start with holiness, you end with holiness. So that's what Truma and Ma'aser Rishon teach you. Okay, now you have the philosophy. You know that this world is not for its own sake. It's not an end in itself. It's a means to reach an end. You're based on holiness. You're working towards holiness. It's all part of a process of planting, plowing, and eventually harvesting. But that's all very nice. You have this idea. How do you put it into practice? How do you know what holiness is? It's very nice to want to be spiritual, but how do you know what spirituality is? Right? So you have to learn. That's the next mitzvah. Ma'aser Sheni. What's the purpose of Ma'aser Sheni? The second Ma'aser, you don't give to a Kohen or a Levi, right? Like Truma and Ma'aser Rishon. You bring it to Yerushalayim and you eat it yourself. Now what's the purpose of that? To have to take food and eat it in Yerushalayim. So Tosfos says, the Torah says, in order you should learn to fear God. How do you learn? By eating Ma'aser Sheni in Yerushalayim. Because Yerushalayim, where all the big Talmidei Chachamim, the Sanhedrin was in Yerushalayim. So all the big Talmidei Chachamim in Yerushalayim. Kohanim, Leviim, lived in Yerushalayim because they had to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. The Kohen Gadol was there, the Melech. So you were around all these very high spiritual people. Right, you spent time, Mela, all the yeshivas, Kimitzion Teitzei Torah, the yeshivas were in Yerushalayim, spending time in Yerushalayim, eating your Ma'aser, taught you how to serve Hashem. You learned how to serve Hashem by being in that atmosphere of Yerushalayim in order to have to eat your Ma'aser Sheni. And if you couldn't eat it all, so you put your children in the yeshiva and you gave them the Ma'aser Sheni to eat. So your children learned Torah in Yerushalayim. So Ma'aser Sheni is now, okay, now that you have the right philosophy, now you have to put it into practice. So learn what it is all about, and now you can apply it. You know what the philosophy is, but you have to learn to know how to apply it. So that's Ma'aser Sheni. What's Ma'aser Ani? Ma'aser Ani is, it's not enough just to care about yourself. If you have this philosophy that the world is to develop holiness, and now you know how to do it, don't only worry about yourself, help other people also. You have a responsibility to teach them. You have a responsibility to help them physically, materially, and spiritually. That is the mitzvahs, the four kinds of mitzvahs that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us with the fruit, that we should be able to implement this philosophy of fruit, of future, not immediate gratification, but working for a future goal, right? And understanding that that's what a tzaddik is. Now, if you take the letters in the Aleph Beis that obviously would represent these four kinds of mitzvahs, there's something interesting about it. If you take the first, Truma, okay, what letter of the Aleph Beis would represent the first? Aleph, obviously. And now you have Ma'aser Rishon, the tenth. What letter would represent that? Yod. How about Laman Tilmad Liyiras Hashem Elokecha? Now the next mitzvah is, okay, so learn how to do it. What letter represents learning? Lamed. Limud. Okay? And now you have Ma'aser Ani. You help people who are not fortunate enough as yourself, either know or whatever. The Ani, the letter that is the center of Ani is a Nun. Why? Because the Nun represents falling. Someone who can't support himself. Nafla v'lo sosif kum. That's why there's no Nun in Ashrei. Nun represents Nefila. Nun represents falling, okay? And that's why the merkaz of Ani is the fact that he can't support himself. He's a Nun, okay? So if you want to now have to support the people who can't support themselves, and that's part of this mitzvah, right, spiritually, physically, materially, So what letter would represent these people that need support? Nun. Put the letters together, what do you get? Elan. So the Elan, which is the Aleph Tzaddik, right? Learn about the fruit tree, and you'll see what a tzaddik is. The Elan itself represents these four mitzvahs. Reishis, Maaser, Limud, Nefila. These four mitzvahs that have to do with the fruit. So that's something at least to think about on Tu B'Shvat when you're dealing with the fruit of Eitzim and Ilanos, right, Rosh Hashanah, the Ilanos, that if you look at trees and their configuration and you learn about the fruit-bearing quality of trees, then you'll understand what it means to be a tzaddik.